Welcome to this episode of Larger Than Us. Today we'll be discussing the stigmas of alcoholism in our community, how drinking and the path to recovery are perceived in our community, and as well as the journey to sobriety. So joining us with this conversation today is Sonia, who is the founder of Everbloom, an online community for alcohol recovery and support, and she's very passionate about empowering people to talk about their mental health journey transparently and their relationship with alcohol. And so she has made it her mission with Everbloom to improve the resources and destigmatize the conversation about the recovery process. So without further ado, welcome Sonia, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, just to start us off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, like your journey to becoming sober, and as well as how you started Everbloom?
Yeah. So I think I was pretty typical drinker where I just would, you know, binge drink. I binge drank in college. And then, you know, I was given we were talking about three options of careers. And so I became a dentist instead of a doctor or pharmacist and, you know, binge drank through dental school and all kind of seemed pretty normal. And then kind of came a time where I didn't have to study anymore at night. And I would like, oh, okay, I'm gonna have a glass of wine. I would come home, open a bottle of wine and have a glass of wine. And it just, the more stress like my career took on, the more I was drinking. And so that went on for a really long time, like over a decade probably. And I think in the back of my mind, I knew there was a problem. I had a lot of like alcoholics in my family. And so I knew, like I you know, deep down, I think, you know, I knew for a number of years that I was using alcohol to cope with stress and that I wasn't doing the things, like I wasn't working out, I wasn't meditating, I was just drinking. And so I sold my business and decided to quit. And it was like the best thing I ever did. And so I just like, everything changed. It was like the way I looked, you know, at what I wanted to do with my life changed. I thought, I really want to be of service, right? Like I want to do something positive. Because the way I had sort of like suffered in silence, I thought was, you know, it didn't have to be that way. I could have been talking about it. So I slowly just started talking about it, not in any like formal way. I started like writing about it and like, you know, blogging a bit. And then when I started Everbloom, I had been with my husband for 18 years. And I think I had changed so much over the last, you know, 5-6 years of being sober where, you know, I'm not like the party girl. I'm not, you know, I want to kind of hang out with, like today I'm going over to bake a cheesecake with my 9-year-old niece. Like I had changed a lot. On a normal Saturday, I'd be like out at a bottomless mimosa brunch, right? And so I think, you know, it got sort of to the point where he had never said anything that, oh, like you're changing and these are the things I want. And so he literally got up one day and left with almost no explanation. And I thought, wow, I feel like drinking, right? Like this is not something I was prepared for. And so I just realized that I hadn't developed like a sober community. And so I really wanted to talk to other women and yeah, in my sobriety had become a lot more introverted. So I didn't want to go on a huge meeting with hundreds of people. I didn't really necessarily want to go in person. And so I looked for what I needed and I couldn't find it. And so I created Everbloom.
That's amazing that you were able to create this community that kind of uplifts and shares that experience of sobriety. Of course, like, I mean, I can't relate to that, but I can understand, like, you know, that community is so important to kind of build. And I'm happy that you were able to kind of put that together. I guess, like, going back to, like, you know, your very early days, like during your drinking and all that stuff, what were some of your early challenges and obstacles that you were trying to, that you kind of faced as you were trying to get sober? And how did you kind of navigate or overcome them? And this could be either mental challenges or even like physical challenges. Yeah. Like what was your brain kind of doing in that transition
yeah,
in your life?
It was doing everything. So it was like the combination of, I'd really like to talk about this, but I'm a medical professional, right? And so who do I talk to without like setting off like alarm bells, like my orthodontist is an alcoholic. And so that kind of thing where I was nervous and really we shouldn't have to be, because I think if you're, you know, there are so many healthcare professionals struggling with addiction and it's better to just kind of get it out and fix the problem. So there was that, which was kind of stopping me from talking about it and making kind of like sober friends. And then I think really like the hardest thing is I had no coping mechanism. So I had to sort of rearrange my life in a way that was healthier. So I had to get proper sleep and like eat better and, you know, just, and I had to be really authentic, like with myself. And so that, those were sort of the things that like early sobriety on top of just like not drinking, you're trying to figure out what were the reasons I was drinking and how do I fix that? Or how do I, you know, do other things to make up for the, you know, not drinking, because drinking was like quick and it worked every time. So it was like, I'm stressed about this thing. And it's like, great, you have a glass of wine, one glass of wine, you're feeling better, two, three, four, you're like, problem solved.
Yeah. And I think also with like the culture of kind of encouraging, like the movies kind of show like, oh, if you're, you should do this, or like kind of encourages a, or puts a positive connotation to drinking. I can't imagine how much pressure that goes, because that, like, you always see it in the movies and the TV, and then also like, I don't know, people our age too, like, oh, let's just go get, they joke around about it. Let's just go get wasted because XYZ happened. So it's kind of like a cultural thing to like just go and like kind of expend your energy in that way whenever you do feel stressed or have a roadblock or anything.
Yeah, for sure. We normalize it. When I, you know, be talking to my friends and saying like, you know, I'm getting divorced, this is horrible, like come over and we'll open a bottle of wine. It's not, and it doesn't sound like there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but it was, that's sort of how, you know, women like, you know, in their like late 30s, early 40s, which I was at the time, that's sort of what we do, right? We get together with our girlfriends and we open a bottle of wine and we complain about our husbands or ex-husbands. And so, yeah, I remember feeling that very specifically during that time where I don't know how many of my girlfriends were like, that didn't really know I was sober, didn't know, they knew I didn't drink, but maybe they didn't know the reason why, I would be like, just come over and we'll just, you know, we'll talk about it over a bottle of wine.
Yeah. And I guess to help, I guess, with our listeners who might just be like unfamiliar with this, like what are some early signs or behaviors for those who end up are going down that path or like becoming really heavy drinkers that are, it's more unhealthy than like a social drinking? Because I know a lot of people say I do this socially, but really those patterns, or there could be patterns and things like that, that could be underlying to going into heavy drinking.
Yeah, for sure. I think that when you take like a healthy relationship with alcohol to unhealthy is when you're using it for, as a crutch for whatever it is. So even if you're using it, so I did use it as a crutch in social situations. So I did drink more than everybody else in a social situation. I didn't really let myself like know that. Like I thought, well, everyone's drinking, not a big deal. But you know, I had a really, really, really like debilitating hangover the next day. And I don't know if everyone else did. And so I think that as soon as you realize you're using it to solve some problem or you're leaning on it, each time you're like kind of encountering the same type, like if you have a relationship problem and every time you get into an argument with your spouse, you find yourself drinking, or every time, you know, different things, like you have work stress, you find yourself drinking. So I think it's looking at the, letting yourself see the patterns in your life.
Yeah, I think that's really important, just because, you know, especially, you know, speaking at least from our perspective, you know, we're in our early 20s, there's a lot of, you know, outside pressures to kind of lean on that and use that as a crutch, not because we don't know how to talk about, like, not because we don't know how to deal with certain things that we're going through, but it just feels like an easy sort of fix, or like a Band-Aid sort of, it's just a nice thing to have for a little bit. Yeah. While you're kind of in that initial phase and then kind of go through. So I guess kind of going off that a little bit, what are some cultural things in American and South Asian culture that aren't really inclusive for sober curious or sober people? Yeah. You know, what are some outside pressures that people who are trying to be sober feel in everyday life in different situations?
Yeah, I think American culture, I think that we're all kind of familiar with that, right? Like, I think we all know Like the happy hour, the like bachelorette parties, the like, you know, there's so many events in like American culture that are just so alcohol centric. And then, you know, with South Asian culture, there's such a stigma to admitting anything about an addiction, because I think one, you're admitting you have an addiction, but it implies there's a mental health issue, right? Like I think underlying an addiction is usually something. It doesn't have to be something, you know, extreme. It could just be like depression, anxiety. But I think it is saying like, I have a problem. And I think we're not used to saying that. And yeah, I found it really tough to tell my family that I was not drinking. And then when I would tell them, they would think, oh, like it's for health reasons or something. Like they wouldn't really, no one really wanted to grab onto that reason. And so, and even though my brother had struggled with alcohol and was sober, I felt like, yeah, just, and my brother was great about it. He was, you know, very supportive and understood, but I feel like the extended family, even my parents, never really wanted to say the word alcoholic or the word addiction. I think it just, and then it's, you know, also if they admit that about me, they've got to look at like the 95 uncles at the last wedding and be like, those guys have a problem, you know, like it opens up like a can of worms of like, who has a healthy relationship with alcohol? And then, you know, where do you kind of like draw the line with like judging people around you? And you know, you guys know too, like all Indians care about is what other people think, right? And so there's such a like big part of the community is like, what are people gonna think? And so I remember going to like a party with my parents and they were like, just pour a glass of wine and keep it in front of you. And I was like, I don't drink. Like, why would I do that? Like, just leave it there. Just so, you know, so almost like it would look like I was sort of like, you know, engaging in this party more. But yeah, I think that there's so many like nuances of like South Asian culture that make admitting that you have a problem with alcohol, especially because not a lot of drugs, I think, in our culture. I think there's really heavy drinking. It's super normalized. So I think, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like both cultures is very polarizing. Like in American culture, it's very like accepted or easy. Like no one really questions when you like want to start drinking or like just want to go into it. And then in South Asian culture, it's like, especially when you start out, no one really tells you or like, it could be like in your experience where like everybody's doing it around you and just no one's really talking about how it's not healthy. And so I think it's super interesting in coming from our background of being South Asian American, because those types of struggles of outside of the like identity is like you want to be accepted in like your social settings and like here where we grow up, but also you want to fit in with the social settings of like South Asian community, like parties and weddings and stuff.
It's interesting because you say that, like, you know, I feel like you had such a like different upbringing in terms of like your relationship to alcohol when you were growing up. I feel like me and Kirti, like, we're part of the same like similar friend group, whatever. But I feel like we had almost the opposite experience where everyone was very, very against alcohol and very, very like, you know, we weren't taught a lot of these kind of things. And then we ended up going to college and being like, oh, I don't know anything of what other people are saying about this, but I don't know. I don't have the language to understand any of this, but now I'm being told that this is something that I need to be good at. So it's like this, like, odd, it's like going back. It's like an odd transition. So it's interesting. I don't know. I feel like it's interesting that you say that there is a huge, like, what the, from your experience, that there was a huge kind of presence of alcohol in where you grew up, because it's just so different from how we were told. We were almost conditioned, like, no, we can't do that. That's bad. That's bad. That's bad. And then we come to college, it's like completely different. I'm like, oh, okay.
And I think there's like so many different kind of like little communities, like of South Asian communities. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pretty broad spectrum, and there are some that are really heavy drinking communities, and mine just happens to be one of them. And the one thing that was interesting is that women didn't drink. I never saw my mom drink. I never, like, so it would be these guys in the basement with the bar and like some Crown Royal, and then the women kind of like upstairs cooking. So it is, I think there are differences between like different communities, right? And so some communities like just don't drink at all. Like it's just not even part of their social gatherings. But for us, it would have been unusual. Like if you didn't offer somebody alcohol when they came to our house or for a party or at a wedding, it would be so unusual.
That's a super interesting point that you brought up in terms of like women were never like, when I think about it, like my family was in a weird predicament where some of my parents' friends, that was the culture where like they would all get together, the buddies were there, so they'd all crack open a beer and like drink to like done. Yeah. And then the other end was like my parents' friends, which is similar to Sneha's group of friends. They would like, if you even just brought up the word of alcohol or like when you were like are just talking about like drinking about it, they're just like they give you a look and like you're just like don't even talk about it. Like it's very unhealthy in that end as well. Like we're not even going to talk about it. It's kind of like with sex and abstinence, like you're not gonna worry about it till you have to. Like that was the relationship with alcohol on that side of the community.
Do you think it was cultural or religious in your case? Like, was there a religious sort of like, I know with us, like there's a religiously, like people don't smoke cigarettes. So I never saw people smoking cigarettes, but do you think there's some sort of like element of that in it? Or do you think it's just like,
I think it was kind of like, like alcoholism in one of the families. So then it was like the trust thy neighbor sort of thing where it's like, oh, they said that their family had this issue. So then now we can't do that. And it's like these strict sort of boundaries that have been placed because of one or two families that have faced that. I think that's what it is. I don't think it's religious necessarily. It is more of like a cultural, like trust thy neighbor kind of situation from my understanding.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's like one family was just has a really their relationship with alcohol, like they've seen their loved ones go through it really in a bad way. But then I also think it's also the connotation of drinking. Like when people, I think, and I don't know, it's just our section of the community, when they see people drink, it's like a very negative connotation, like, oh, you're doing bad things, oh, you're going down a really bad path. So like that's why they just don't want to talk about it at all, like you're just keep it to the corner, which is really bad because I know there's other like communities. I think our age when we were going into college, a lot of people were just raised with like, you're not even gonna like ask us about liquor, you're not even gonna ask us about this. And then they go to college and it's so easily accessible that they're like, oh, finally the hidden treasure that I can never open. Like I can finally use it without any like parental control, obviously, because you're in college. So I have seen like people be very unhealthy with alcohol very quickly. Like they would be like taking 20 shots a night, and I'm like, that is like you're gonna go to the hospital if you do that. like that. But it was like not even talking about it, just taking 20 shots a night. That was like the 180 flip with some people. Personally, for me, my dad drinks in a social setting, so like at weddings or like if we go to a nice restaurant. So for me, I've grown up with like seeing him with a glass of wine or something like that. So to me, it was a little bit more normalized in the sense of like it's not a big deal. It wasn't like something treasure to reach when you finally can have it. So it was, I think, but that was just really interesting. I was thinking like how we're like prepped, I think, is very different in our community versus American culture is very normalized. Like, oh yeah, my dad drinks, like this is how it is. And then in South Asian, it's like you have to chase it, or like it's something that's like a reward when you're like 21, which is, I don't know if that was similar in your experience growing up, or if that was just maybe our community.
I grew up in Canada, so the drinking age was like a little bit lower, but at no point would I have said to my parents, like, I'd like a drink, and they would have been okay. Like there was like, absolutely not. This was something that older men did, and it was not even something for me to like think about or talk about. So really similar, right, to you guys, where it was like, don't even ask about this. Like, we're not going to talk about it. Like there was, and they weren't like the kind of glass of wine at dinner types. They were really like go all out at a party type. So it wasn't normalized. Like I never saw healthy drinking. I saw either like no drinking or like the 20 shots a night drinking.
And out of curiosity, like when because you did mention how like the women never drank, and that I feel like kind of being set to a higher standard or expectation of weighing of they carry those. Did that ever affect how your experience or like growing up in terms of like kind of expectations for yourself, seeing that as well?
Yeah, it really, like, I think that I saw men functioning very low functioning alcoholics, right? And so they were getting in fights, they were loud. And so I knew I didn't want to be like that. And so I was always pretty, you know, controlled, like with, even though I was drinking a lot, I was still like, I wasn't acting out. I didn't have a ton of consequences. I think also because I kind of had like guardrails, like a little bit for myself. It was like, well, I have to be at work at, you know, 8 a.m. And so I'm going to stop drinking at this time. Or yeah, I think I had some guardrails the whole time. It was either school or work. And yeah, I think that I was almost proud of the fact that I was so high functioning, right? And that I was still so fun. And yeah, and then I think that's easy also to ignore having a problem, because it's like, I'm graduating, I'm, you know, starting business, I'm getting married, I'm buying a house. Like, how could I have an alcohol problem? And so I think that was a big part of it, was the high functioning.
Yeah, I totally relate to that in the sense of like, I feel like we're told to perform no matter, like at a high level, no matter what. Like if you're dealing with stuff, if you're like, you just still got to like get it done. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And it's more like if I wasn't showing up with like a bruise, I didn't fall. Grades are still pretty good. No one's going to question. I think I learned that at an early age, right? If you're succeeding in certain parts of your life, like your family's not going to question the sort of like social aspects of your life.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. I know, hopefully we're not switching gears a little bit, but like, I think in general, could you share with us a little bit about your relationship with your hyphenated identity and like growing up, how you felt being Indian American, South Asian American? Just to kind of give the viewers that perspective as well.
Yeah. And I think like I'm so curious what you guys think too, because I think it is really generational. And so I'm, you know, in my mid 40s. And I think that, so my parents came from India in the 60s, right? And so there was no celebration of the culture. Like they assimilated quick. And we didn't really openly practice religion or even openly kind of practice the culture. Like we ate Indian food at home, but we weren't really, I don't know how to explain. I wasn't so proud of being Indian. It was more like a try to fit in the best you can. And then there's this like other part of your identity. And I think it's not like that as much more, anymore. I think we really celebrate those differences. So for me, it was just like a sense of not fitting in by being just like, all I knew is that I was slightly darker, right? That's all I knew. Why are all the other, like, what's one of these blonde hair, blue-eyed girls? Like, what happened? And we didn't talk about it, really. And so, and I think it took me a while. It took me getting, like, quite a bit older to really, like, appreciate my culture and really not be sort of embarrassed about being different. And I think that's a huge also step to kind of like embracing who you are and being comfortable, and also takes this like layer of anxiety off, right? That I was probably drinking to cover up. And so, yeah, I think since I quit drinking, I feel a lot more connected to my culture.
No, that's really great that you were able to kind of find yourself with your sobriety almost. And I think that's really important. I guess kind of going into it a little bit, what are some challenges you notice in our community and in supporting individuals to paths of sobriety, both in South Asian community, but also maybe in American community? And then just the stigma around drinking, and how can we make these environments more inclusive to people who are sober curious or who are coming to terms with their alcoholism or is going through these emotions? How can we support these people in our community?
Yeah, I think for me, like I'm really connected to the idea of community and support, and especially for women. And I think that we can support people by talking about it. I think that's like the biggest thing we can do. I wish someone had said to me, like, I think you're drinking a little too much. I wish people had felt like, I mean, I'm not saying like attack somebody, but, you know, telling somebody like, it's okay if you think you have a problem. I think that, you know, that's not, you know, we can fix this. Like, it's fixable. It's not something that you have to kind of suffer with in silence, and you're not the only one. And so I think with both cultures, I think that American culture is a lot more open to the sober curious movement now. And I don't know how much has changed with South Asian culture. It doesn't seem like a ton has changed. I still don't see a ton of people talking about like mental health and addiction in our culture. But I think that, I mean, I think what you guys are doing is helping. I think all this like talking about it and normalizing it.
Do you think if there was kind of a warmer approach to introducing younger individuals to alcohol, that would make maybe their relationship to it more healthy, especially within like just with drinking in our community, but also just even like talking about mental health issues and like that kind of stuff? Is that something that like, do you think if we just had a warmer approach to it, just mental health issues, alcoholism, everything, just alcohol in general, do you think we would have a more healthy relationship to it?
Yeah, I have like conflicted feelings about it. I feel like for sure we should have a warmer approach to mental health, right? And for sure we should say, look, this is normal to have, you know, these feelings, and it's okay to get help for them. I think for me with, you know, alcohol and even drugs, it's tough because I never had a healthy relationship. And I don't know if anything could have ever changed that, if having that kind of like warm approach, like seeing people have one glass of wine at a dinner, I don't know if that would have changed it. And then it's interesting because I have teenage nieces, and I am nuts with them. I'm like, don't drink, you can't drink. Like, I mean, I try to sort of explain to them, you know, what happens when you start to use alcohol as a crutch, and you start to use it, especially in social situations, and how you don't really develop your identity as much when you're using it. So I don't, you know, I kind of like wish I was more open to like encouraging them to develop a healthy relationship with alcohol. But I think for me, it's like with them, I think the genetic factors are so strong that I would prefer they not, you know, test it, but I understand that they will. And so, yeah, I still think in that sense, like I definitely am like, don't drink, but if you do, you know, make sure you're doing X, Y, and Z. So I think, yeah, I think I'm just conflicted about it. I think that there are some people that can't have a healthy relationship with alcohol, and I don't know whether a warm introduction would help that, but I think mental health, absolutely. I think all of that, like, I think that yeah, if we talked about mental health issues, it would be such a huge difference. It would have made a huge difference in my life.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like mental health is definitely a huge trigger for turning to alcoholism, just because especially when we're told by our community from a very young age, and even just in general, like regardless of how that came about, we're told that we need to cover it up. We have to be perfect. We have to be good. We have to. And I think it's that suppression of that suppression can lead to, you know, turning to other things to numb the pain, to yeah, use it to calm things down in your head. And I think just doing that more and more and more, it can lead to something bigger. And I mean, with any addiction, there's also this, I mean, I don't know anything about alcohol addiction specifically, but like addiction just generally, I feel like there's a level of like, you know, you want to cover it up when it happens. Wow. And your brain automatically kind of subconsciously does that. And if you're in that moment, you're convincing yourself that this is normal. This is fine. Everyone is doing this. This is just how everything operates. And, you know, getting into that, I think the first step in our community would be to acknowledge the mental health issues that we have, the immense pressure that we put on the individuals in our community. I think that's so important to acknowledge. So I completely agree.
I think there's like the immigrant experience is sort of informing it. So, you know, my dad walked however many miles to school without shoes, and you're going to be like, I think I have some anxiety. He'd be like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
You gotta be kidding. Like, I had like $3 when I moved here. And so I think that there's this sort of like comparison between like what they consider almost like a man-made problem, right? Like, what do you mean you're depressed? Just stop it. Like, or what do you mean you have a problem with alcohol? Just stop drinking. What's the big deal? Because I think that the things that they've struggled with seem so much bigger, right? Like so much more related to like getting through the day. And I think that they don't have as much like empathy for, and I don't blame them because I get it. Like right. My parents had a hard life. And so there was no room for like, I think I'm just going to sit here and like think about like how upset I am about this. I can't get out of bed. Like I can't imagine it. Like one of my parents being like, I can't get out of bed. I'm so depressed. Like it was like, it's so like unacceptable that I sort of understand where it comes from, but I think we're in a different place now. And I don't think that like mental health issues don't exist in, you know, for example, my parents are from India. I think people have got a ton of mental health issues there. I think they're just not talking about it.
Right. We've sort of like evolved, which is a good thing and a hard thing to understand. Cause like when you see, like, it's really interesting because people immigrate to make sure that the next generation has a better life. And then when they actually have the better life, they're like, well, why, what are your struggles don't mean anything. Like they'll, like some people would just be like, oh, my struggles were like this much and yours, this is nothing compared to me. It's like, well, that's the whole point. You immigrated, right? Like you wanted us to take that next step.
I almost feel like my parents are more backwards than the people living in India because they sort of like stopped. Right. Like they, and so, there's things like, what do you mean love? What do you mean you have to love somebody to get married? Like, what are you talking about? Or like, what do you mean? Like you want to be like fulfilled by your career? Like that's not the point. Right. And so I feel like maybe there's more of a movement, like, you know, in the old world in that, like, you know, people like, you know, with Bollywood movies and things like they're showing things that even I don't think my parents would accept. Right. Like right, about right. me. And so, yeah, I wonder about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned earlier about how you know genetically that alcoholism runs in your family. And so you, with awareness, try to tell your nieces to become more aware and become more educated. Yeah. I think that's super important that you do that because I feel like that's what we lack in our community in that sense as well. Because, like, I get stressed when I have to go to the doctors and they're like, what is your family history? And I'm like, no one has ever told me who had what disease, who has what. And I get so stressed and they're like, tell me your maternal and your paternal side. And I'm like, I can't tell you. Like,
can I tell you? Yeah. No, I think I figured out the alcohol piece of my family sort of on my own, just from like being like, wait a sec, this guy acted like a fool. That wasn't, you know what I mean? Like it, no one talked about it. So I think it was more looking back and realizing, kind of like realizing what I had been seeing growing up. I'm like, wait, that's not normal. That's not a healthy relationship with alcohol. But no one told me. No one admits it, but I totally agree. I also think with the maternal, paternal side, like medical history stuff, I also think people died earlier, right? So like, one of my grandmothers died in a bus accident in India and at 30 something. And so, or died in childbirth. And so I think we don't know what genetically we're predisposed to sometimes.
Yeah. And it's really interesting though, like when I think this also goes with mental health, but like when my parents told me like diabetes runs in the family, they're like, extra aware, like you better not be eating sugar. They'll like text me like every once in a while, like, are you, make sure you're eating healthy. And it helps us become more aware. But when it comes to like, oh, maybe like history of people having like depression or alcoholism, and like in your case, or like even like with pregnancies, like postnatal depression, like I'm sure that is generational for some women, but no one talks about those types of medical history. Which, but I think we need to start being more open about it. Like, yes, yeah. I did have depression after I gave birth, or I did like have to go get therapy. I did take medicine to help with my anxiety. I think that would help a lot more.
I think it would too. I think it goes back to the same kind of like, you should be so grateful you had a baby. What are you depressed about? And it's like, yeah, but these are like, you know, there's definitely things behind it, right? Like with postpartum depression. And yeah, I remember even my parents being like, I remember I was so busy and my business was doing well. And they're like, what are you depressed about? Like, there's nothing to be depressed about here. And yeah, I think we do sort of like brush things under the rug.
I think in those situations too, I think people forget that sometimes mental health is also hormonal. It's not controlled by you. Yeah. Like that's not something, you know what I mean? Like there's like mental health that's caused by trauma and things that you have to deal with. but then there's also like a chemical thing going on in your body, and that's like intangible to you, but like, it's I'm not pretending. It's not fake. Like, it's not. It's
I think you're so thing. Right about like the trauma. I think that when you say something to like your family, like, I'm depressed, they're like, well, I didn't do anything.
Yeah,
you.
Exactly.
Like, what you do? And it's like, no, it may not have even, it may not be trauma-based, right? And not everything is trauma-based, but I think there is this sense of like, I did everything I could and you're still depressed. You have an alcohol problem. Right, you have like, right. You know, these issues. And I think that, yeah, I think there is some sort of feeling of like, that they're being blamed for something when it's not, that they're not, you're not being blamed.
Right.
You did a great job. You tried your best.
Yeah. Kind of shifting gears a little bit. We'd love to learn more about Everbloom. And I know when I was researching into your platform, the main unique differentiator in comparison to like traditional like AA meetings is that it's online, and it's so you don't have to necessarily show up like you mentioned earlier in the episode, but also it's a way to get peer support or community.
Yeah.
And leveraging that. So can you share with us a little bit about why that is super important in the recovery process and how your platform fills any of those gaps with the current resources don't necessarily support for those who want to become sober?
Yeah, for sure. So I noticed what I was going through my divorce, and I noticed like I would have all these bizarre feelings. Like I would get an email from the lawyer of, you know, his last name versus like my last name. And it would like, it was physically painful. And I remember saying it to one of my sister-in-laws who was divorced. And I'm like, it hurts every time I get an email. And she's like, yeah, it does. That's how it feels. And I was like, that's all I need to hear is that what I'm going through is normal. And so I thought, you know, this relates so much to when I was, you know, and even now about like alcohol, it's like, I kind of feel like having a drink, and it's okay for someone to be like, yeah, that's what it feels like when something really bad happens. You feel like having a drink. And so, yeah, I just, what I really wanted to is to create some consistency in the relationships, because I noticed that the most sort of comfort I got was from people that I had an existing relationship with. And so the normal model of alcohol recovery and drug addiction recovery is a drop-in model. And so here's the list of meetings, come whenever you feel like it, which is great. I think we need that. I think we need like, you're having a bad day, there's a meeting at 2:00, jump in. But I think we also need where you like a group of people where you don't have to explain your story every time, they sort of know. Like for example, with me, I don't want to go to a meeting and then every time be like, and my husband left and blah, blah, blah. And like, but with people that already sort of know your backstory. And so that's what we're trying to create, is these sort of like little pods almost of, you know, women that really know each other. And so when things come up, that they know what their reactions are going to be. They know how to help each other like a friend, right? And luckily in this case, the sort of background is they all are struggling with alcohol. And so I think that's a big difference. Another big difference is, we don't stigmatize like a slip, right? So, and we also realize like that quitting drinking isn't everyone's goal, and not everyone wants to be labeled an alcoholic. And so there's so many different types of kind of problem drinking that isn't sort of addressed in what's out there right now. So you can't go to AA and be like, I had a glass of wine this weekend. They'd be like, that's a huge catastrophe. Like, what do you mean? You have to go back to the first step. We got to start this all over again. You're back on day one. And we don't really subscribe to that philosophy. I think that if your goal is to have a healthier relationship with alcohol, having 20 days of the month where you didn't drink, if that's a success. Like that, like we need to kind of realize like what we need to redefine what like a success is. And so, yeah, that's sort of what we're trying to do, is, you know, create this sort of closeness that where you're not judging each other, where you sort of understand where people are coming from, and everyone has a different goal. It's okay to be like, the goal to be, look, I can never drink again. That's mine, right? My goal is not to be able to have a drink in a year from now or 2 years. It's not, I know myself well enough that that's not something that's going to work. And so, but everyone deserves to be able to figure that out for themselves.
Yeah, and creating like a safe space to be able to make mistakes or kind of stumble if you need to, which I feel like is a better than setting up the expectation that like you're never gonna make a mistake going forward or try not to.
And I think too, especially as women too, like we have other pressures, right? And so the pressure to kind of be perfect or to do it exactly right the first time is, I think if we remove that, I think people have an easier time because pressure is also one of the reasons we drink, right? So if you put pressure on your quitting, it's like, what's the point?
You have to reward the wins and instead of, punish the losses, which is not great. I think that's really great. And I guess like for our listeners, can you just share some advice that you might have if they might be going through any sort of drinking or alcoholism or going through trying to be sober, or if they know someone who's trying to be sober and is going through that transition? Do you have any advice for these individuals and to help them or help their friends?
Yeah, for sure. I think if you're going through it and you think you might have an issue with alcohol, you probably do, right? And I think that we all deep down know when there's an issue. And I would say, like, listen to that inner voice that's telling you that your life is not as amazing as it could be, right? And think about your life without alcohol. And I think, you know, for someone that's kind of noticing somebody with a problem, I think that, you know, saying something gently is probably the best thing. You might save somebody's life. Like, you don't even know the effect it could have just by saying to somebody, like, hey, you know, do you remember what you did last night? Or something, even like, it doesn't have to be something really serious. Or how are you feeling today? That type of thing, I think, is like a non-judgmental, like, way of asking somebody, like, you know, what's going on with them. And so I think, yeah, I really do believe in like community and about talking about it. And I think that I think that if I had been comfortable talking about it, I may have made changes earlier. And also, I think that we need to kind of realize that high functioning in like career does not mean you don't have a problem with substances. So I think that's the kind of like facade, and I think that it you have to kind of say to yourself, I get it. Things look good from the outside, but then why do I feel this need to like drink when I get home? Or why do I feel the need to drink in a social situation? So that's my advice.
That's a great way to end the episode. So thank you again, Sonia, for joining us on this episode of Larger Than Us. We appreciate you being very open about your experience, sharing us about Everbloom, and just giving us your thoughts about this topic and how it kind of is in our community. So for listeners, if you would like to learn more about Everbloom services or follow Sonia and her path to growing Everbloom, take a look at the episode description to all the links to her platform. And so we'll have it all linked down in there that, so that you can keep following her after this episode. So once again, thank you, Sonia, for speaking with us.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. We're glad that you got to stick to the end. If you have any thoughts or want to share anything with us about our platform, follow us on Instagram at RedefiningABCD to give us your thoughts on the episode and stay updated on our platform. And with this, we hope you all stay safe and happy, and we will see you all in the next one.